As they turned back for the shelter of the huts, a pair of dark eyes watched their every move from the hills above the camp. The dark, brooding gaze was that of Soe, the prophet of Eos, who had bewitched Queen Mintaka. It was he who had written the inscription on the wall of the hut. Now he regretted having announced his presence. He lay in a patch of shade thrown by the crags above him. 3 days previously, his horse had stepped into a cleft in the rocks on the path and broken its foreleg. Within an hour, a pack of hyenas had arrived to pull down the crippled animal. While it still screamed and kicked, they ripped chunks of flesh from it and devoured them. Soe had drunk the last of his water during the previous night. Stranded in this terrible place, he had resigned himself to death, which could not be long delayed. Then, unexpectedly, and to his great joy, he had heard hooves coming up the valley. Rather than rush down to greet the newcomers and beg to accompany them, he had spied upon them warily from his hiding place. He recognized the troop immediately it came into sight as a detachment of the royal cavalry. They were well equipped and superbly mounted. It was plain that they were on a special assignment, possibly on the orders of the pharaoh himself. It was even possible that they had been sent to apprehend him and drag him back to Karnak. He knew that he had been noticed at the ford of the Nile below Thebes by the Magus Taita, and that the Magus was a confidant of Queen Mintaka. It did not need a stretch of the imagination to realize that she had probably confided in him, and that he knew of Soe's involvement with the Queen. Soe was patently guilty of sedition and treason, and would stand no chance before a tribunal of Pharaoh. Those were the reasons why he had fled Karnak. Now he recognized Taita among the troopers camped below where he lay. So he studied the horses that were tethered among the huts on the river bank. It was not clear which he needed most to ensure his survival, a horse or the bulging water skins that a trooper was offloading from his pack mule. When it came to his choice of mount, the mare that Taita had tethered outside his hut was indubitably the strongest and finest of them all. Even though she was with foal, she would be Soe's first choice if he could reach her. There was a great deal of activity in the camp. Horses were being fed and watered, copper pots were being carried up from the river pool and placed on the fires at which men were busy preparing food. When the meal was ready, the troopers divided into four platoons and squatted in separate circles around the communal pots. The sun was well above the horizon before they found a little shade in which to settle down. A somnolent silence fell over the camp. Soe marked the position of the sentries carefully. There were four at intervals around the periphery. He saw that his best approach would be along the dry riverbed, so he gave the sentry on that side his full attention. When he had not moved for some considerable time, Soe decided that he was dozing. He slipped down the flank of the hill, screened from the eyes of the most alert sentry on the near side boundary. He reached the dry river course half a league below the camp and made his way quietly upstream. When he was opposite it, he raised his head slowly above the top of the bank. A sentry was sitting cross-legged only 20 paces away. His chin was on his chest and his eyes were closed. So he ducked below the bank again, stripped off his black robe and bundled it under his arm. He tucked his sheathed dagger into his loincloth and climbed to the top of the bank. Boldly he headed for the hut behind which the grey mare was tethered. In nothing more than a loincloth and sandals he could try to pass himself off as a legionary. If he was challenged, he could reply in fluent colloquial Egyptian that he had gone to the riverbed to attend to his private business. However, no one challenged him. He reached the corner of the hut and ducked round it. The mare was tethered just beyond the open doorway, and a full water skin lay in the shade of the wall. It would be the work of a few seconds to swing it over the mare's withers. He always rode bareback and needed no saddle blanket or rope stirrups. He crept up to the mare and stroked her neck. She turned her head and sniffed his hand, then shifted restlessly, but quietened again as he murmured to her soothingly and patted her shoulder. Then he went to the water skin. It was heavy, but he lifted it and threw it over her back. He slipped the knot of her halter rope and was on the point of mounting when a voice called to him from the open doorway of the hut. "Beware the false prophet! I was warned about you, Soe." Startled, he glanced over his shoulder. The Magus stood in the doorway. He was naked. His body was lean and muscled like that of a much younger man, but the terrible scar of the old gelding wound showed silver in his crotch. His hair and beard were in disarray, but his eyes were bright. He raised his voice in a loud cry of alarm. "On me, the guards! Hilto, Habari! Meron, here, Shabako!" At once the cry was taken up and shouted across the camp. So he hesitated no longer. He swung up onto Windsmoke's back and urged her away. Taita threw himself into her path and seized her halter rope. The mare came to such a sudden halt that Zoe was thrown onto her neck. "Stand aside, you old fool!" he shouted angrily. "He carries a knife," Fenn's warning echoed in Taita's head, and he saw the flash of a dagger in Zoe's right hand as he leant down from Windsmoke's back to slash. If he had not been forewarned, Taita would have received the thrust full in the throat, where it was aimed. But he had just enough time to duck to one side. The point of the dagger caught him high in the shoulder. He stumbled backwards, blood streaming down his shoulder and flank. Zoe urged the mare forward to run him down. Clutching the wound, Taita whistled sharply, and Windsmoke shied again, then bucked furiously and hurled Zoe headlong into the fire, knocking over the water pot in a hissing cloud of steam. Zoe crawled off the hot coals, but before he could regain his feet, two burly troopers pounced on him and pinned him to the dust. "'Tis a little trick I taught the mare," Taita told Zoe quietly, and picked the dagger out of the dust where he had dropped it. He placed the point against the soft skin of Zoe's temple just in front of the ear. "Lie still, or I will skewer your head like a ripe pomegranate." Meron rushed from the hut naked, sword in hand. He took in the situation instantly, and pressed the bronze point into the back of Zoe's neck, then looked up at Taita. "The swine has wounded you. Shall I kill him, Magus?" "No," Taita told him. "This is Zoe, the false prophet of the false goddess. By Seth's sweaty testicles, I recognize him now. It was he who set the toads on Demeter at the ford." "One and the same," Taita agreed. "Bind him well. As soon as I have seen to this cut, I desire to converse with him." When Taita emerged from the hut a short while later, Zoe was trussed up like a pig for market and laid in the full glare of the sun. They had stripped him naked to ensure he had no other blade concealed, and already his skin was reddening under the caress of the sun. Hilto and Shabako were standing over him with drawn swords. Meron placed a stool with a seat of leather thongs in the shade thrown by the wall of the hut, and Taita took his ease upon it. He took time to survey Zoe with the vision of the inner eye. The man's aura was unchanged from the last time he had scried it, angry and confused. At length Taita began to ask a series of simple questions to which he already knew the answers, so that he could watch how Zoe's aura reacted to either the truth or a lie. "You are known as Zoe?" Zoe glared at him in silent defiance. "Prick him," Taita ordered Shabako. "In the leg, and not too deeply." Shabako delivered a finely judged stab. Zoe jumped, shrieked, and twisted against his bonds. There was a thin trickle of blood on his thigh. "I shall begin again," Taita told him. "You are Zoe?" "Yes," he grated through clenched teeth. His aura burned steadily. "Truth," Taita confirmed silently. "You are an Egyptian?" Zoe kept his mouth closed and stared at him sullenly. Taita nodded at Shabako. "The other leg." "I am," Zoe answered quickly. His aura remained unchanged. "Truth?" "You preached to Queen Mintaka?"
"Yes."
"The truth again."
"You have promised her that you will bring her dead children back to life."
"No." Zoe's aura was suddenly shot through with greenish light. The sign of a lie, Taita thought. He had the yardstick against which to measure Zoe's next replies. "Forgive my lack of hospitality, Zoe. Are you thirsty?" Zoe licked his dry, cracked lips.
"Yes," he whispered.
"Clearly the truth."
"Where are your manners, Colonel Meron? Bring our honoured guest some water."
Meron grinned and went to the water skid. He filled a wooden drinking bowl and came back to kneel beside Zoe. He held the brimming bowl to the parched lips, and Zoe gulped huge mouthfuls. Coughing, gasping, and panting in his eagerness, he drained the bowl. Taita gave him a few moments to regain his breath.
"So, are you scurrying back to your mistress?" "No," mumbled Zoe. The green tinge to his aura marked the lie. "Is her name Eos?" "Yes, truth." "Do you believe she is a goddess?" "The only goddess. The one supreme deity."
"The truth again, very much so."
"Have you come face to face with her?"
"No."
"Lie."
"Has she allowed you to gijima her yet?"
Deliberately, Taita used the coarse soldier's word to provoke the man. The original meaning had been to run, which was what a soldier in a victorious army had to do to catch the womenfolk of the defeated enemy.
"No!"
It was shouted with fury.
"Truth. Has she promised to gijima you when you have obeyed all her commands and secured Egypt for her?"
"No."
It was said softly.
"Lie.
Eos had offered him a reward for his loyalty."
"Do you know where she has her lair?"
"No."
"Lie." "Does she live near a volcano?"
"No."
"Lie."
"Does she live beside a great lake in the south beyond the swamps?"
"No."
"Lie."
"Is she a cannibal?"
"I do not know."
"Lie." "Does she devour human infants?"
"I do not know."
"Lie again."
"Does she lure wise and powerful men into her lair, then strip them of all their knowledge and powers before she destroys them?"
"I know nothing of this."
"A great and veritable lie."
"How many men has she copulated with, this whore of all the worlds? 1,000? 10,000? "Your questions are blasphemous. You will be punished for them."
"Has she punished Demeter, the Magus and Savant? On her behalf, did you send the toads to attack him?"
"Yes. He was an apostate, a traitor. It was a judgment he richly deserved. I will listen no longer to your filth. Kill me if you like, but I will say no more."
So he struggled against the ropes that held him. His breathing was hoarse and his eyes were wild, the eyes of a fanatic.
"Meron, our guest is overwrought. Let him rest a while. Then peg him out where the morning sun can warm him. Take him outside the camp, but not so far that we cannot hear him sing when he is ready to converse once more, or when the hyenas find him."
Meron strung the rope round his shoulders and began to drag him away. Then he paused and looked back at Taita. "Are you certain that you have no further use for him, Magus? He has told us nothing."
"He has told us everything," said Taita. "He has bared his soul."
"Take his legs,"
Meron ordered Shabako and Tonka, and between them they carried Zoe away. Taita heard them hammering the pegs to hold him on the baked earth. In the middle of the afternoon, Meron went out to speak to him again. The sun had raised fat white blisters across his belly and loins. His face was swollen and inflamed.
"The mighty Magus invites you to continue your discussions with him," Meron told him.
Zoe tried to spit at him, but could gather no saliva. His purple tongue filled his mouth, and the tip protruded between his front teeth. Meron let him lie.
The hyena pack found him a little before sunset. Even Meron, the hardened old veteran, was uneasy as their demented howling and giggling drew nearer.
"Shall I bring him in, Magus?" he asked. Taita shook his head. "Leave him. He has told us where to find the witch."
"The hyenas will make it a cruel death, Magus."
Taita sighed and said quietly, "The toads made Demeter's death as cruel. He is a minion of the witch. He spreads sedition through the kingdom. It is fitting that he should die. But not like this. Such cruelty will sit heavily on our consciences. It reduces us to his level of evil. Go out there and cut his throat."
Meron came to his feet and drew his sword, then paused and cocked his head. "Something is amiss. The hyenas are silent."
"Quickly, Meron, go and find out what is happening," Taita ordered sharply. Meron ran out into the gathering darkness. Moments later, his voice echoed from the hills in a wild shout. Taita jumped up and ran after him.
"Meron, where are you?"
"Here, Magus."
Taita found him standing on the spot where they had pegged Zoe down. But he was gone.
"What happened, Meron? What did you see?"
"Witchcraft," Meron stuttered. "I saw..."
He broke off, at a loss to describe what he had seen.
"What was it?" Tater urged. "Tell me quickly." "A monstrous hyena, as large as a horse, with Zoe upon its back. It must have been his familiar. It galloped off into the hills, bearing him away. Shall I follow them?"
"You will not catch them," Taita said.
"Instead, you will place yourself in mortal peril. Eos possesses even greater powers than I had thought possible to have rescued Zoe at such a great distance. Let him go now. We will reckon with him at some other time and place."